There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pits of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination in an area which we call Elder Dragon Journey.
At the Elder Dragon Dome podcast. This is your host, Tigger, and as always with me is my co-host, Niksha. Say hi, Niksha.
Hello.
How have you been doing, Niksha?
I've been doing fine. Well, now, it's only a week that has passed?
Yes, that's surprising.
Incredible, even. So, I've been doing fine. I've not been playing Magic. How have you been?
I also have not been playing Magic, but I will in a couple of days, because my vacation is going to start.
Woohoo!
Yeah, I'm actually super hyped for it. I will actually manage to go out and play Magic with people. That's going to be weird. I'll be rusty as hell.
Also going out feels weird.
Not going to lie, yeah. I'm kind of accustomed to, finishing when I'm going back home. From home, going to work, and then going back home, and that's it.
Yeah, pretty much my routine as well.
Since I'm an introvert, I can't really complain. But sometimes it does feel nice to go out and play a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually I did play some Magic, but it was after work. We stayed at the office for a couple of hours, and we played some Modern.
Must be really nice to have a job and you not actually despising actively every second you're spending at the place.
Yeah, it's okay.
But
anyhow, yeah.
Do you have any commanders or decks of the week, I guess, since you play Modern?
I'm gonna go with... I'm just gonna say that we've managed to playtest my Mono G Tron, and the G stands for Golos. So it's basically a mono green Tron, but with four Golosai in it. It's Golosai, right? Not Goloses. I'm pretty sure it's Golosai.
Four multiples of Golos.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
So I did cut out some tutors for lands like Sylvan Scrying, since I have maps and stirrings and stars. And Golos does weird stuff. So the deck is a bit more heavier on the chunky side of the mana cost.
Surprising for you.
Yeah, and let's just say I played against it while playing my Blue Tron. And I was like, okay, he assembled Tron and he's playing Golos. And I'm like, okay, let's see what happens if I let him resolve. It was a mistake, yes. Because he continuously activated Golos and, okay, he never hit two big cards with Golos, but he did like hit a big card, a land, and like a chromatic star. But still.
If I learned one thing from just playing Cube, Golos is a really good first pick. Even in Cube,
Yeah, I mean, at worst he gets a land.
Yeah. And then you get to activate him, because you're playing Vintage Cube.
And it turns out that it doesn't matter how many cards he actually plays. They're, in a way, free cards, and when I'm playing Control, I really can't afford...
Yep.
To have him play free stuff.
To avoid the stack, you really can't avoid that. You can't allow that.
It's like he just plays like 7 mana. It's like tap 4 lands and draw 2 cards and play them. And I'm like, okay, I can counter 2 cards per turn, but not forever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I do have an assembled Tron, I do have Spellburst, but his cards cost a significant amount of mana. Like, I could deal with, like, some pesky little decks, like, countering them two or three spells per turn just with one counterspell, with the Spellburst, but when all the spells are, like, 7+, then no, it just doesn't work. So yeah, Golos is a must kill and must counter in Tron, I guess. I have to test it against, like, actual decks or something. It does do well against Burn, though, because of the main deck Thragtusks and the four Worm Coils.
Yeah, what is Burn to do against that?
Well, smash to smithereens and Skullcrack.
Yeah, but you need to spend so many things to just get rid of, you know, one.
Yeah, but you spend so many things to get rid of it, and then you might win.
Might.
You might win.
Or and you then, spend all the time getting rid of that, and then they play another one. You're just like, oh.
And okay. Then there's that Thragtusk guy.
Yep.
Thragtusk, he just doesn't care. He blocks.
Yeah. Anything else?
No.
Because we have a shitload of things to go through.
Oh, yeah. Like, well, you're probably expecting us to go over Zendikar, but for me, their announcement for next year of Magic is super hype. Like, it feels like this was, like, a really bad year, but next year feels really, really good. Like, strong.
If we all survive.
We will.
Want to go through the main sets first, or just want to go through the queues?
So let's just go over the products, and then we'll be going to Zendikar, okay?
First we start the year, or what? Whenever it comes out, in Kaldheim, that's an actual set.
Mm-hmm. Kaldheim's a set that's taking place on Kaldheim.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, it's a Viking set. They said that, and I'm pretty sure that it's going to be snow-themed, which is going to be really great, because it's Kaldheim, so it's cold, so... Mm-hmm. If it's not snow-based, it's gonna be mildly disappointing. And so yeah, the return of snow mana into standard.
If it's the legit actual snowlands.
Well, I sure hope. And they can even bring the fabled snow duels there.
Hmm.
The fabled, like... The theory crafted by many people, like snow duels that are legendary, so you can't have more than one in play. So we'll see if they actually do that.
That's gonna be interesting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's probably gonna be a warrior-focused set, and we're gonna get some Norse gods, so some new twists on gods as well.
I am A-okay with more warriors.
Yeah.
Just give me warriors with stacks effect so I can draw even more cards of Mind of the Render and the homies.
So, I'm looking forward to Kaldheim just because of the implication of snow in Standard and with that in Pioneer as well.
I'm at least looking forward from the aesthetics standpoint.
Oh, that too.
Because every card's out is gonna be a metal cover.
Oh yeah, Vikings all over the place.
Mm-hmm. What's next?
Next up, we have in the first quartal as well, Time Spiral Remastered.
That's a paper set?
So yeah, we had Amonkhet Remastered just a couple of weeks ago.
Think so.
That was arena only. And Time Spiral Remastered is an actual paper set. It's probably not going to go to Arena because it's Time Spiral, and Time Spiral is like chock full of mechanics that I don't think they have the time to actually implement all of them on Arena.
Pun intended, or?
Definitely.
But Time Spiral as a draft set was super interesting for us older players.
Mm-hmm.
Who got the references, you know, and all that. Because every card had at least 1 to 3 references on it.
Yep. And I don't know if I actually mentioned it on the show, but I do remember talking with a multiple number of people, numerous peoples, about my idea of, like, okay, we're going back to Zendikar, but what if we don't do a new set? What if we take the original Zendikar block and just make Zendikar Remastered and put that as a standard set? Like, the best cards from the 3 sets of the block and just put that as a standard set.
Not sure how that work, draft-wise.
Well, neither do I, but that's not my job, really.
Because Zendikar and Worldwake were a really fast set to draft, right? The late game was like turn 5, because you would just get many fast dudes and smack face.
And landfall to the face.
While Rise of the Eldrazi was not.
Well, you had the Eldrazi, yeah.
It was slower and much more battlecruiser, and, you know.
Yeah, it's just that... So, the idea actually happened, it's just with Time Spiral. So, if I actually mentioned it on a show, like, now I can say that I'm psychic or something. Or I told you so, or something like that. Anyway, bonus internet points for me. I'm just saying that.
Yeah. We did got 3 cards spoiled for the set, which are going to take place for the time-shifted slot, right?
Yeah, so they're doing the time-shifted slot again, and they're going to do newer cards, but in old frame.
They know what I want.
Yeah, they know what everyone wants, because they spoiled Path to Exile, Relentless Rats, and Chalice of the Void.
I want 2 of those 3 cards.
I want 4 of copies of all of them. Actually, a bit more Relentless Rats.
I was going to say, a bit more for Relentless Rats.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind having Chalices in relation, not going to lie. Chalice for 1, ho-ho.
And yeah, they look really nice.
I love my old border, what can I say?
Man, imagine if they do it like that, and also on some new cards that have newer wording, they put like old wording on them.
They won't, because they with Path to Exile, you already see that they're not going with that.
Yeah.
I was hoping it was going to say it's removed from the game, but no such luck.
So yeah, Time Spiral Remaster is probably going to be really cool. I think it's not going to be like Masters level expensive, because it's a draft set. I imagine it more along the lines of Battle Bond, or maybe even Mystery Boosters. So like just a bit more expensive. But yeah, that set sounds amazing, because Time Spiral block was really cool. And let's just say that Modern Horizons 1 was like a pumped up version of Time Spiral, and people loved it. So I'm pretty sure that having a draft set that consists of the best of Time Spiral block is going to be amazing.
Next coming is in second quarter, Trickshaven School of Mages. I can't tell anything about that, because nothing was set or spoiled.
Yeah, I mean, it does have a bird in its logo, and it does have Strix in its name, so I'm guessing that Baleful Strix reprint?
Baleful Strix, but there's a legend?
Maybe? Yeah, I think that Baleful Strix would be, like, a tad too powerful for standard.
You know.
Just a tad.
Just a smidgen.
Just a little bit. But hey, maybe they print it and they say we're preemptively banning this card because we just wanted to print it because Strixhaven.
I think if they printed Baleful Strix as a legend, it would actually be more nerfing the card than anything else. Because you can't have multiples in play.
I also like to jokingly call the set Scholomance Academy, because just recently Hearthstone had a School of Mages expansion. But, you know, it has nothing to do with this, because the Magic sets are made like 4 years back.
Mm-hmm.
But so are some Hearthstone sets, so...
If we want to talk about hype, what's the next set, Nixon?
They did say one thing about Strixhaven, and that it's going to be very unique.
Oh, you told us everything now, Wizards?
Yeah. Oh yeah, next set. So yeah, the next set had me, like, super hyped, and I'm guessing you too.
Mm-hmm.
So the next set in the third quartal, replacing the core set, is going to be D&D. Adventures in the Forgotten Realms.
Before we say anything, I have to say one thing. Why did it take them so long to make this? Because Wizards have had the D&D licensing since like 99, I think. Maybe a bit before. And they had Magic since, you know, 93. Actually, no, a bit later, but that's neither here nor there.
In short, it's owned by the same company.
For a long time now, and it took them until now to make this. I'm confused.
Yeah, and on the stream, they said that they always put some little reference to D&D in some core sets, like Bag of Holding, which is like literally an item from D&D. And now they're just gonna replace the core set with a full-on D&D set. And it's not gonna be like the literal game D&D inspired, but like with the literal lore of Forgotten Realms inspired. So it's gonna be its own world with its own story, and it probably won't reference like the real life D&D mechanics. I think I'm pretty sure it won't. Like, instead of becoming the monarch, you become the dungeon master. And do something.
You become a nerd. But D&D already has magic as a part of the setting.
Mm-hmm.
Because Multiverse, Ravnica, yada yada yada. They're printing, I think, Ixalan. No, not Ixalan.
Theros was the last thing I remember they did.
But there is something new coming out. But, you know, it's been a thing in D&D for a long time, a magic.
Yeah, and
so
this...
it's nice to see they're switching it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be a really big, like, reason for the people that play just D&D and maybe some casual Magic to actually get more invested in Magic. So it's going to be a really big crossover event.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm imagining that since they're bringing in so many players from another game they own, they're probably going to keep the whole set simpler, like a core set.
Yeah.
It will still probably have a lot of reprints, but not nearly as a core set. But yeah, looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
I actually never actually like read any D&D stories. I just played D&D, and I know the general lore of D&D, so seeing an actual set with an actual storyline is going to be interesting. And what's even more interesting is, will it be like an isolated story, an isolated set? Or will, like, members of the Gatewatch arrive at the at the plane? Is it actually going to be, like, magic canon?
Could we not have Gatewatch doing things?
I mean, not the Gatewatch, just like, Jace randomly stumbling upon Forgotten Realms.
Yeah, I know what I said. Could we just not have those guys do things for a while? Give us actually new fresh characters.
That would be interesting, because if there are native planeswalkers on Forgotten Realms, their spark ignites by them going to another plane and back.
Mm-hmm.
So it's gonna be interesting if it ties to the rest of Magic in that way.
You go from Sword Coast, let's say Ixalan, then back to Sword Coast. And like, what the hell was that? I saw huge wingless dragons.
Or you go from there to New Phyrexia, and you're like, oh what?
You get a small cut and doom the entire Sword Coast.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no. But yeah, I'm expecting a new twist on gods as well there.
Oh yeah, they have a bunch.
And last, but actually not last, but the final two, the final two products coming in the fourth quartal.
Mm-hmm.
We are having Team Jacob versus Team. What's he called?
Edward,
yeah. So, Innistrad Vampires and Innistrad Werewolves. Now, I'm not sure if they're... So, those are two full sets. Each set is, like, a full set of Magic. Names are, of course, not final. They just said that one will have more emphasis on werewolves, one will have more emphasis on vampires. And I think they mentioned that there will be at least one vampire wedding in there.
Huh.
And I don't know if it's coming out at the same time, or is one coming out then and the other one coming, like, 2022.
Because we have no actual ideas.
Yeah. But yeah, going back to Innistrad. And what is the last one they announced?
Modern Horizons 2. Let's break Modern again!
Well, aside from some obvious mistakes they made,
when I said break Modern, I also meant Legacy and, you know, other sets, other formats.
Yeah, let's break everything but Standard, because Standard breaks itself already.
Yep.
But as much as it had some really big, let's say, mistakes, it did really spice up the format, mm-hmm. in a good way.
I mean, it had like one or two cards that screwed everything over, and the rest of the set was actually pretty good.
Yeah, Urza got Mox Opal banned, and for that I'm thankful to Urza.
On the other hand, Urza brought Urza, so
Yeah, Urza brought Urza to Commander.
And other formats.
I mean, in Modern he's almost not relevant anymore.
Yeah, but there was a time where he was just actually crushing it.
All over the place, yeah. But yep. Then they banned a couple of cards like Mox Opal and then Arkham's Astrolabe. And suddenly there isn't any Urza anymore. But yeah.
We can hope for a really good set with Modern Horizons 2.
Especially since they said one very cool thing about the set is that, well, for starters, they said that it should cost similar to the previous Modern Horizon. It will be a print-to-demand set. Sorry. A print-to-demand set. And it will have the fetchlands. The Zendikar fetchlands. The enemy? Enemy?
I think the enemy are the ones.
They are the... let me just take a... Yeah, the enemy fetchlands. They'll be the only strict reprint of the set.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, just a year from now, we're gonna get them Fetchland reprints.
Hooray!
I mean, it's probably going to significantly drop the price of Fetchlands.
Or it's gonna pull more people into Modern and places, and then it's gonna skyrocket because of demand.
It's gonna do stuff. To other stuff.
Because the problem is you want them for, you know, Modern and Legacy and, I was gonna say Vintage, but who am I kidding? for Commander. So demand, super high.
But also print to demand set.
Yeah, we shall see.
So as long as people play it, it will be printed. Oh, and we'll and let's hope for a Renin 7.
Oh no. Oh no.
Now just one mana.
Screw you, Nixia.
So yeah, the next year seems pretty cool. There's a lot of really cool sets, like especially the D&D set. And, well, they promised something unique for the... Man, I'm trying not to say Skolomans Academy. Strixhaven.
Burb School.
Yeah, for the Burb School. I mean, Kaldheim. We were hoping for Kaldheim for a couple of years now.
I'm still hoping for the Immersturm that we got that plane. Do you know which plane that is?
It does sound familiar.
Remember that enchantment when a creature enters the battlefield, it smacks anything?
Yeah.
Six mana. Yeah, that's Immersturm.
Mmm.
There's always storms, which kind of name explains it, because Immer means, you know, ever, and Sturm means storm in German, so... Guess what?
Yeah, never-ending storm.
Yes, and that sounds dope as hell, but we're not here to talk about that, are we?
Nope.
We're here to do the actual main topic, which is the Legends of Zendikar spoiled so far. And there is like 60 of them.
Yeah, we'll do the rest of the set some other time. Because since they have such a narrow window to spoil everything, they spoiled, like, a lot.
To say it
lightly. So we'll go over just over the legends. Oh, maybe I will. I think
that just doing the legends today is enough, because there's
a lot
to talk about, and then we can actually parse the set later.
Mm-hmm. So let us begin. Want me to start or?
Four color friend. Let's talk about him.
Oh yeah, the four color friend. Go ahead.
So Omnath, Locus of Creation, red, green, white, blue, a legendary creature, elemental. He's a 4/4. And did he actually grow in size? No, he first grew, then shrunk, then grew again, going to cards.
Mm-hmm.
When he enters the battlefield, draw a card. Hooray! And then his landfall. Whenever land enters the battlefield under your control, you gain 4 life if this is the first time this ability has resolved this turn. If it's the second time, add his mana cost to your mana pool. If it's the third time, Omnath deals 4 damage to each opponent and each planeswalker you don't control.
So the fact that he enters the battlefield and draws a card is... Well, for me it's completely meaningless, but for people who like Food Chain, I guess it means something. You know, drawing your entire deck.
If you really want to win the game.
But his ability, his landfall ability is very weird.
Interesting. It's interesting.
Yeah. So it's a limited time. It's a very limited thing to do. Like, you only have 3 triggers, but that's why you can keep blinking him.
Yeah.
And just reset the whole... The first time, second time, third time, blah, blah, blah. And I see him as being valuable just on the second land drop.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, fetch lands are really good for making 2 land drops per turn.
I hear good things about this.
I'm just saying.
Plus, you should maybe be playing them in a 4-color deck.
Probably. So, what that means is, if you get Omnath on turn 4, on turn 5, with the fetch land, you have... 4, 8, you have 9 mana.
That's good. I hear good things about that.
And you don't even need the fetch land. You can use a Terramorphic Expanse. You have 8 mm-hmm. mana. That's Ugin mana. And you get 4 life. So I see this as a really... I mean, for Commander, it's obviously like a... for me, it's a big stuff Commander, because what's not a big stuff for Commander for me?
I was gonna say everything is a big stuff Commander to you.
I know. But that's fine, you know. Big stuff is cool too. What was I gonna say? So
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, beyond the big stuff, Commander, I don't really care about brewing something else. Not even the fact that you can flicker him to reset his landfall. It's like, it just seems like so many... It seems like too much trouble to just win the game. Because you're probably going to win the game if you start doing that. So I'll focus on the, you know, add 4 mana to your mana pool. And actually, he also seems decent for, like, modern. If you can afford the mana base, that is.
Where would you play it?
Well, in elementals.
Oh, yeah.
Like, 3 or 4 color elementals, or like 5 color elementals, is an actual kind of legit deck.
It's fringe, but it's...
It's fringe, and if it rolls nice, it can be really... It can seem really, really powerful. It's because, you know, with... When others have Uro, you have Reef Elemental. Like your budget Uro. And yeah. With Omnath Locus of Creation, you can actually superpower the deck with the second landfall. And the first landfall actually helps you stabilize and stay in the game. So you see him as like a... As... You put in some payoffs, I think, for the high mana cost, because it's not something you... It's not something you're going to be like, okay, this is my game plan, like getting 8 mana on turn 3. It's not gonna happen, really. So, no Ugins for you. Also, Ugin would kill your board as well, so...
Oh, well, you know. Some sacrifices need to be made.
You know, you can play... Is Wanderer legal? He's not, right? Maelstrom Wanderer, he's not legal in Modern.
Yeah, he's not legal, no.
Okay, good, because that would be, like, the top curve.
You think?
You would do some shenanigans with it. But, still, I like him. Super simple for Commander, really. There's not... If you don't want to go full shenanigans with him, you don't have to, and he's still really good. Or you can go super brew mode and do all the infinite combos you can with him.
What's next to talk about?
So, I'm gonna go by colors, starting with the top of the spoiler list. So we have Drana, the Last Blood Chief. For 3 and double black, it's a 4/4 legendary creature vampire cleric with flying. And whenever Drana attacks, defending player chooses a non-legendary creature card in your graveyard. You return that card to the battlefield with a +1/+1 counter on it. The creature is a vampire in addition to its other types.
No, it should be only like 3 mana and 2/2 or something like that, with that effect. That would be nice.
That would be nice, but that would also be...
I'm surprised with Drana and her mana cost going up and down, up and down.
And now she's actually the Last Blood Chief, so what does that mean? Yeah. That, like, the vampires are dying out or what? Who cares? She's a cool commander. That's all I'm gonna say.
If there was any story to be talked about in Magic anymore, I would tell you, but, you know, there is not.
So, the effect... as a commander, so what would be a game plan with her as a commander? I would say some form of self mill, because you can get that in mono black.
And tomb and buddies.
In tomb.
What is that Necromancer's Apprentice? What's the name of the card? The dredge, please. Supplier.
Oh, Stitcher's Supplier.
Yes. The stuff of him.
But you need both...
You go actual full on reanimate with her, and she's the backup plan. That's how I would play it.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking more like, you go self-mill, and then you use a bunch of delve cards to actually filter the trashy cards in your graveyard.
Yeah.
So your opponents have, like, little choice to as to, you know, what's going to kill them next.
There's like, what, two or three good dredge cards in mono black?
Yeah, there's a couple of good dredge cards.
The demon, the thing that makes your opponent sacrifice creatures, right? The murderous cut.
Oh, you mean delve?
Delve, yeah.
Oh, you said dredge.
Sorry, delve.
But yeah, dredge is actually another way to get your graveyard going. So yeah, we have the murderous cut, you have that big demon, you have soul flare. So you can actually do some soul flare shenanigans as well, as a, like, a sweet little trick. I'm pretty sure that there's that, from the Council of Tarkir set, or some part of the block.
Dead Drop, I think is the name of the card.
No, I was thinking about the guy that actually delves you. He has delve, and you can exile X cards from your graveyard to have a creature get minus X, minus X.
Oh, yeah. The demon, right?
Yeah.
I can see the card in my head, but I can't remember.
You can't remember the name, but
yeah,
that's a really nice, consistent source of delve.
Mm-hmm.
And
also that card that makes zombies.
Yeah, that card that makes a bunch of zombies. I mean, you just delve to make a lot of zombies.
Yes.
So yeah, some dredge delve plan, that sounds pretty good to me. Also, it comes back with a +1/+1 counter.
Mm-hmm. Which is not negligible, but it's a small upside.
And with it being a vampire in addition to its other types, it's... You could do something with that fact, but I wouldn't count on it. You can also use it as like a pure vampire tribal. But I think that if you're going vampire tribal, then you're better off with, you know...
Well, like I said, I think that this is just pure reanimator strategy.
Mm-hmm. But I can also see her as a good part of the 99 in... Mm-hmm. Similar reanimator strategies, like in Cedr is pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I would say it's really good in Cedrus, in Karador, because I'm probably the only person playing Karador at this point.
More or less, yeah.
I mean, if it were a 5-mana 2-2, then it would be good in Alesha.
Oof. Luckily, there is other good Alesha cards in this set, but we'll talk about them later.
Next episode.
Yep. Next Legendor.
Yeah.
So, Ashaya, Nissa's companion, I guess, / familiar. I'm not sure how that relationship goes. Soul of the Wild. For 3 and a green, it's a star. Ashaya, Soul of the Wild's power and toughness are each equal to the number of lands you control. Non-token creatures you control are forest lands in addition to their other types. This is the epitome of Dice to Armageddon, right?
Yeah. Dice to Wildfire, dies to...
Oof.
A lot of things. It's like, this makes your whole board die to any of those things, but... You know, it also has plenty of upsides as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You get all the mana ever if you have a decent board.
Mm-hmm. Not only that, but your landfall triggers are now triggered by creatures.
Yep.
Non-token creatures, luckily. Otherwise, it would go infinite really easily.
Mm-hmm.
I think it can go infinite like this. I mean, just get a creature that can be bounced. I mean, you just need Cloudstone Curio. That's really not that hard.
That card is kind of busted here.
Yeah, so you see Ashaya as like as one of the best additions to the Omneth, the creation one, because with Ashaya you get your easy landfalls, and with Cloudstone Curios you get the easy repeats of Omneth, because he can literally cast himself with two landfalls. So, first part done.
Yeah, Ashaya is kind of basic when it comes to that. You most likely have a huge Ashaya, you will, you know, have a bunch of dudes that might or might not be vulnerable. Depending on what you're playing against.
Oh yeah, and for the tokens, you also have that... You also have the future sight thing that turns your Saprolings into forests, and forests into Saprolings. Oh, no, wait.
I mean, you play Avengers of Zendikar with this on board, and it's like, oh. Oh, my.
Oh, my. Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens if you play that card that makes all your forests into sapperlings? Okay, I'm not going to think about that. I'm going to wait for the official rules explanation for those things, even though it's pretty much tied to timing and weird stuff like that.
Timestamps.
But let's not get into that. Just don't play that enchantment. I can't even remember what it's called.
You didn't play it before, you're not going to be playing it now.
Yeah, just don't. Just don't. Unless you want your local judge to hate you, don't play it.
Moving on. What did we say our opinion on Planeswalkers is? Do we cover them or not?
Nah.
Carry on then.
A very interesting one for me. It's Morag Fury of Akum. It's a four...
Yeah. Did you skip Tazri? I think you did.
Oh, no, I'm going row by row.
Aha! Uh-huh. I'm just going by colors, you know, left, right. But anywho, yeah.
So, Morag Fury of Akum is 4 and double red for a 6-6 Minotaur Warrior. Each creature you control gets +1/+0 for each time it has attacked this turn. And landfall, whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, if it's your main phase, there's an additional combat phase after this phase. At the beginning of that combat, untap all creatures you control.
Huh.
Well, the first weird part is it gives an additional combat phase, but it doesn't say followed by an additional main phase. So, basically, if you play it on main... if you trigger the landfall on main phase 1, you get bonus combat steps followed by combat steps.
Huh. That's interesting.
So there is no time to... there is no rest for the aggressor. You just keep attacking.
Just follow what the greenskins do.
Yeah.
Wog, Mr. Bond. Wog.
So, obviously, with a fetch land, you have 3 combats. It's just 1 fetch. You can attack 3 times.
Yes.
Red does have...
Red does play, have... there's those lands that can bounce themselves, right? You would play those as well with this guy.
Yeah, there's also Terrain Generator.
Yes.
So for Mono Red, you have options. You have plenty of options to trigger a lot of landfalls.
But to expand, put him in Saskia or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Give me all the comments I can take.
And I actually really like him for if I still had the... what was the Marisi deck? This would be an auto-include.
Yes.
Like, force everyone to attack everyone all the time. Just attack.
I like the Marisi deck. I'm sad that you actually took it apart.
Yeah, I'm just trying to minimize the amount of decks I play. Because then some deck will always be on the... like on the side, never to be played again, or something like that. But you see, if I acquire a foiled Morag, it's going into Golos.
I mean, definitely. What else can you do?
Because Morag is definitely a way to finish the game if you're playing big stuff.
Mm-hmm. That is gonna happen when you have Golos out.
I mean, even as a mono red commander, you can go on a turbo ramp plan and just, you know, ram into Eldrazi.
But the thing is, you don't need to even have that much turbo ramp to kill people fast with this.
Yeah.
Just have... imagine if you have, like, let's say, have 4 3-1 elemental tokens. And then you play any type of fetch and even, you know, evolving wilds. There are now 5-1s.
Yeah, so they first attack for 4, then they attack for 5, and then on the third they attack for 6.
Yeah.
It adds up.
It adds up quite fast.
So you can go super wide with Morag, or you can go like Eldrazi Titan territory and, you know, You don't have to choose which player you attack with your Kozilek. You can now attack everyone with Kozilek.
That's politics.
Or you can make one person really, really dead. That works too.
Screw that guy.
So yeah, Morag, a very interesting commander, and mm-hmm. a 99.
So, we were talking about D&D earlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Tazer has decided to bring D&D, you know, to our game a bit earlier than the Forgotten Realms.
Mm-hmm.
Tazri Beacon of Unity, 4 and a white, for a 4-6. Oh, she's chunky.
Mm-hmm.
Legendary creature, human warrior. Was she a warrior before?
Probably.
Oh, no, she was an ally.
Oh, okay.
This spell costs one generic class to cast for each creature in your party. By the way, your party is if you have a cleric, rogue, warrior, wizard, and or an ally.
No, allies don't fit.
Without an ally, yeah, sorry. So for either two generic or blue, it's hybrid. Two or black, two or red, two or green. Look at the top 6 cards of your library. You may reveal up to 2 cleric, rogue, warrior, wizard, and or ally cards from among them and put them into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order.
So, where do we start with Tazri?
Does she just do infinite mana again and do dumb things?
Let's not talk about going infinite mana, because she's a 5-color commander. If you're going infinite mana, you're playing Kendrith, so why even bother?
I mean...
And you're not getting any style points if you're playing with Tazri instead of Kendrith.
Play her in Angela? She's a warrior.
Well, I was going to say that for me, Tazri is the best or second best cleric and rogue commander there is.
Oh, yeah.
Because first is Morophon, obviously.
Of course.
Or, you know, Sig River Cutthroat. He is obviously the best rogue there is. But, yeah, so Tazri. The party mechanic is...
Interesting.
So, as you said, your party consists of cleric, rogue, warrior, and wizard.
I mean, it actually is supposed to be saying cleric, rogue, fighter / barbarian, wizard, but you know.
Yeah. Changelings will count as all of those types, but it will count as only one person. So you need 4 changelings to have a full party. And I think that even though it's pretty obviously a commander card because it's 5 colors, I think it's more geared towards standard play because of that cost reduction. Because if you have just 2 members, if your party consists of only 2 members, that's already 3 mana for a 4-6.
That's pretty good.
That is really good, and Tazri has a built-in grind matchup win ability. Because, you know, you don't have to actually play 5 colors, you can just pay 8 mana to use her effect. So, until we get a really, really good cleric and rogue commander, I would really suggest just going with Tazri, because she helps you refuel. She doesn't have a strict strategy like some other clerics, but if you're doing like a cleric, like I said, a cleric rogue deck, or if you're doing a party deck, then yeah, Tazri is the way to go. But I think that Tazri will be on the sidelines until we reach D&D.
Yeah, but keep her in mind. What's next up?
Next up is... it looks like we did the monocolored legends.
I don't know, we still have Taborax.
Tabor who?
So, Taborax...
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, go.
2 and a black for a 2-2. Ooh, it's Alishable. Legendary creature, demon cleric, flying... it has lifelink as long as it has 5 or more +1/+1 counters on it. Whenever another non-token creature you control dies, put a +1/+1 counter on Taborax. If that creature was a cleric, you may draw a card. If you do, you lose 1 life. So, tribal clerics?
Actually, he was leaked earlier, and apparently there's probably, if the leak is correct, then there will be Shadowborn Apostles.
Ooh.
So he's a Shadowborn Apostle, tribal deck commander.
General Kenobi. But yeah, this guy is, you know, if it's the Apostle deck you're building, yes, this is a really good commander for it.
Yeah, sec five Apostles, get five Apostles.
Basically. And lose your life.
And, you know, Tabarax is really, really big.
And get a huge demon.
Mm-hmm. But otherwise, as a commander, ignoring the Shadowborn Apostle part, I don't see him as that good a commander, but as part of the 99, he is a pretty decent draw engine if you're using clerics.
He's a support guy.
Mm-hmm.
As clerics are.
Yeah.
That ties in quite nicely, actually.
And it's also kind of weird seeing a demon cleric.
Yeah, you know.
But hey, this is D&D, so why not?
Everything is D&D, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So, multicolor, now.
Now, let's go. So we did Omneth, and yes, we got Philoth, World Sculptor, for 4 and red and green. It's a 5/5 elemental. When it enters the battlefield, create a 0/0/1 green plant creature token for each basic land you control. So it's like Avenger of Zendikar, but only basic lands, womp womp.
Oh no.
And landfall, whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, put 4+1/+1 counters on target plant you control.
I wish he was just named Pilot Zendikar Avenged. That would be a really cool thing.
So, there's nothing really much to say about Philoth.
It is as basic as a white chick drinking a pumpkin spice latte in October.
I mean, I didn't go over the plants of Magic, but I'm pretty sure that there might be some good plant creatures.
I mean, there is, but most of the time you'll be just banking on the army he brings.
Yeah, it's interesting that he can go both wide and tall.
You see, you play him and you play the Minotaur from before.
Oh.
Oh.
That
is actually... Okay, we can do this.
Okay, yeah, I can see it happening. That requires a lot of basics, but, you know, whatever.
Oh no, we'll save a lot of money. Oh no.
Okay, so...
That's a deck!
We got a deck!
Why can't the two of them have partner?
Man...
But yeah, that's... he's basic. That's...
Yeah.
That's just it. So, wanna speak about somebody less basic? have you ever played D&D?
Yes.
Have you ever been or interacted with the person who played an edgy rogue?
That's me.
Well, here is a card for you. Zagras, Thief of Heartbeats, for 4 and black-red. It's a 4/4 legendary creature, vampire rogue. This spell costs one generic less to cast for each creature in your party. Flying, death touch, haste. Other creatures you control have death touch. Whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a planeswalker, destroy the dead planeswalker. Not enough edge if you ask me, but fine.
If you're playing older versions of D&D, then, you know, having a vampire rogue is kind of hard.
Mm-hmm.
Because vampires are like plus five on your level rating. So, you know, kind of not the best way to play D&D.
Yeah.
But still, if you really want to be that guy, it was like, yeah, I have this super cool vampire rogue. He's a vampire, and he steals heartbeats.
Ooh.
Then you have a spell that can actually stop people's hearts, and that's, you know, you're really cool.
If it were a bit edgier, I could shave myself on it.
So yeah, This is similar to Tazri, as in, you know, if it costs a 4-mana 4/4 flying death touch haste,
mm-hmm.
is really good.
That's, but as a general himself, he's a bit of a.
I mean, he gives death touch, so I guess you can.
That's pretty decent.
Yeah. If you're doing a menace deck, which is quite legit, which is legitimate with the Minotaur from Jumpstart, you can actually like that. It's kind of scary because death touch and menace is very scary.
It's a good combo.
Mm-hmm. Also, allowing death touch to actually kill planeswalkers is.
They
should just errata death touch to kill planeswalkers.
Yeah. Because of course it does. What else is it supposed to do?
I mean.
But anything else to say about this guy besides the edgy art?
No, he's a cool guy.
I'm just surprised there isn't enough space for the flavor text where, you know, his family got killed, but then he was serving a dark master, and then.
Then he killed the Dark Master, and now he is the Dark Master.
Yeah. He is Zagras Ravenborn Shadow Darkness Occult 666 Demonborn, yada yada yada. I played with some edgy people in my time, so I know how it goes. What's next?
Next up, we have Kaza, Royal Chaser. It's a blue and a red for a 1/2 human wizard with flying and haste. And tap, the next instant or sorcery spell you cast this turn costs X less to cast, where X is the number of wizards you control as this ability resolves.
Nice.
So it's just the next one spell, and since Paradox Engine isn't a thing that exists anymore...
Womp womp.
It's not... I wouldn't call it a spell slinger style deck, but... Well, should I call it like a chonk slinger or a spell chonk deck that just focuses...
I think this is just the wizard's tribal support deck. But it would be nice to, you know, tap this thing and pay 2 mana for an overall that's a clone crit.
I mean, if you're doing, like, a lot of wizards in the deck, and your game plan is to cast that one big spell every turn, because, you know, you can afford it, then Kaza is a pretty cool commander to go that way.
Yeah, and even if she's not commander, she's good support for that type of deck.
I mean, 2 mana for 1/2 flying haste, I could think of better wizards with similar effects and better stat lines for an Adelie's aggro wizard deck.
Yeah.
But, you know, serviceable.
No, no, what I said, if it's even a support character in the Let's Cast Big Spells deck.
Or,
just throw it over there.
Or, you know, multiple little spells.
Mm-hmm.
Even there, you know, you can do some things with untap target permanent things and things like that. Or, you know, flicker effects, since it has haste, it can do the effect all the time.
But admit it would be fun to pay 1 blue mana to cast an Overloaded Rift.
It definitely would.
Okay, he just has 1 mana available. He can't actually do that much. Oh no, he can do a rift. God damn it. And then you go on Twitter and aggressively ping anybody in the rules committee to, you know, ban Cyclone Rift.
Ban Kaza, not Rift.
Oh yeah, smart. Yeah, they actually did have the meeting for rules committee like the other day, I think.
Okay.
They're talking about stuff, and I'm like, I don't see anything actually needed to be...
No, it's completely fine right now.
See, the thing they were afraid of, you know, oh no, competitive players are going to be asking for more stuff. No, no, not really.
No, no. We're cool. We're cool. But yeah, Kaza, a really interesting build around for big spells. Definitely something I would love to try out, but I must resist. Because taking 2 extra turns for just 2 blue mana seems really, really nice.
Nice.
Anyhow, next up,
Just give me a second. Next up is the disappointment. It keeps on disappointing. Linvala Shield of Seagate. It's one white and a blue. It's a 3/3 legendary angel wizard. She's a wizard now. What the hell? Anywho, flying. At the beginning of combat on your turn, if you have a full party, choose target non-land permanent and opponent controls. Until your next turn, it can't attack or block, and its activated abilities can't be activated. Sacrifice Linvala. Choose Hexproof or Indestructible. Creatures you control gain that ability, and until end of turn.
So it's basically Lavinia, Shield of Seagate, because she detains.
Honestly, Lavinia a bit more useful.
It's just really weird to see Linvala go to this, because
I mean, I think people still resent her first incarnation.
Yeah, but I don't see the evolution of the card to actually do something like this. I mean, why would Linvala care about the party? Why?
Oh, simply, we have made the party, we have made the card, and then we should maybe have a Linvala. They said we have a card open, we have this. Okay, there, that's a Linvala.
Because this really works well as a Lavinia card. It
yes.
works perfectly as Lavinia, but it's Linvala. I mean, the previous Linvala didn't have anything to do with the first Linvala, but it was like a protector of Zendikar.
Yeah, that made sense.
But this Linvala is just like party girl? What?
In a party world.
I mean, you need only three members of the party with Linvala to actually detain stuff. I mean, obviously this isn't really for Commander. It's more geared.
Yeah.
It's definitely geared towards more Standard, because
yeah.
a 3-mana 3/3 flying is good. That's a good stat line to have. Being an angel is kind of an upside as well.
Yeah. We do need to remember that not every card that has Legendary on it is made for Commander. And that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
Yeah, the second ability, it's okay, but really nothing special.
Want to talk about JoJo references?
I don't know, I only see Tekken references.
In Aura, Skyclave,
yeah.
Hierophant? I don't know, it's Aura, so...
So Aura Skyclave Hierophant is a 2-white-black. That's 2 generic white and a black. For a 3/3 core cleric with lifelink. And whenever Aura or another cleric you control dies, return target cleric card with lesser converted mana cost from your graveyard to the battlefield.
That's a cleric commander.
That's a pretty good cleric commander, especially.
Can you lighten me? What's the Tekken reference?
Well, not really a Tekken reference, but in Tekken 7, I'm playing a lot of Noctis, and one of his attacks, he goes Aura.
Yeah,
Aura.
Japanese characters actually do that quite often, but it's mostly associated with JoJo, because everything is JoJo.
everything is a JoJo reference, yeah.
7-page Aura. Some guy got hit super hard for 7 pages. So that's the 7-page order.
Mm-hmm.
Fun times. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this guy is a hell of a cleric commander. Guess what?
And he just screams, try to go infinite.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you could take something like Conspiracy in name core. Mm-hmm. And then you have a thing like, you know, Karma Guide.
Mm-hmm.
Which is suddenly cleric.
Mm-hmm.
And something bit big, yeah. Something bit bigger dies, and yeah, you could actually something bit bigger dies. That's also a cleric now. It goes to graveyard, gets back Karma Guide, which brings back the thing, and you just keep looping it.
Mm-hmm. It also works really well with the demon.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're playing it as like a purely value commander, it's pretty good. Like
you can value a lot.
It's like that. It's like a scrap trawler, but for clerics.
Yay!
Pretty good.
prettiest?
Speaking of prettiest...
Of course I get the stacks piece. Yasharn Implaceable Earth. 2 green and white. I mind the green. We shouldn't have green in this, but you know. Legendary creature, elemental dwarf. It's a 4/4. When it enters the battlefield, search your library for a basic forest card and a basic plains card. Reveal those cards, put them into your hand, then shuffle your library. So this enables your landfall for like 2 turns. Mm-hmm. That's good. But the main reason why you play it is, players can't pay life or sacrifice non-land permanents to cast spells or activate abilities. Staxy.
Yeah, it makes everyone play fair.
Which one of the Powerpuff Girls does the similar thing? From Innistrad, which one of the angels?
It was the Angel of Tides. Of the Tides. That was from Origin.
Did the green-white angel do something similar to this?
No, it said that your opponent couldn't make you sacrifice stuff.
Fair enough. But yeah, Angel of Tides, yeah. But this is in legendary form, and every time, you know, he dies... It gets you 2 lands that you can summon him a bit later.
No, it's when he comes into play.
No, but I mean, he died. He got you 2 lands, so you can actually pay the commander tax.
But that's... Did it again. That means that you're actually playing him as a commander, and why would you play him as a commander if you can play Cisse as your commander, and, you know, keep... Just fetch him, because, you know, Cisse is basically a stacks deck.
Some people like playing Shadow of Colossus as their commander.
Fair enough.
And this is a Shadow of Colossus creature. Look at it.
It's a big old boar.
Just needs to be a bit blacker, I think.
Whoa. Hold on.
For the aesthetics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the next card is... We have actually lined this perfectly. I get a stacks piece and you get this.
Yeah, I get this. I get Zareth's son, the trickster.
Oh my god, that's the most viable card ever. Speaking of edgy...
At least he's not Zareth Senpai.
This is also an edgy rogue. I didn't see it because I forgot the name, but this is an edgy rogue as heck.
So it's 3 blue-black, it's a 4/4 merfolk rogue with flash, and, he has an ability for 2 blue and a black, and return an unblocked attacking rogue you control to its owner's hand. Put Zareth's son, the trickster, from your hand onto the battlefield tapped and attacking.
So is this a rogue jitsu?
It's a rogue jitsu. But wait, there's more. Whenever Zareth's son deals combat damage to a player, you may put target permanent card from that player's graveyard onto the battlefield under your control.
Sheesh
indeed. It's...
Yeah, the deck kind of builds itself, right, with him?
It's just from your hand.
Yeah, but you'll find ways to, you know...
But he also has flash, you know?
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, it's a really good card for a ninja deck, because it has ninjutsu.
Mm-hmm. Rogue jutsu, mind you.
Sure, whatever. I mean, ninjutsu works with everything, so...
Yeah, I know, I'm just making...
But that's because everything's a ninja, and not everything's a rogue.
I mean, this set is gonna change that.
Yeah. So, being able to steal any permanent is... That is really powerful.
That's... Especially when you can, you know... Attack, it's unblocked, you kill something in response...
Mm-hmm.
And then it resolves.
Also, it's not the exact same as ninjutsu, because you have to return an unblocked attacking rogue.
Yes.
And... No, wait.
No, it actually is.
You can still do it post-combat, but why would you do it post-combat?
You would lose a certain trigger.
Yeah. So, okay. So Zareth's son, really cool rogue commander. Really cool part of the 99.
Ah, Zareth Senpai. Notice him, please.
You can... Obviously, you can go for some mill strategy, but the mill plan isn't to actually mill people out, it's just to get guaranteed fuel for Zareth's son.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, pretty straightforward. I will definitely pick up, I'll definitely pick up one to be in the 99 with my ninjas, because, you know, you can't replace Sig.
You
can never replace Sig. Even though Zarathustan has Flash.
And he has a weeaboo name.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a pretty cool card, not gonna lie. I just mind the stupid sword that he's holding. What the hell is that bullcrap? The more I see historical weapons, the more I'm just... The weapons just trigger me.
Like, I mean, it is why? Just a blade with two additional blades.
Yes.
But they're not, like, connected. They're just, like...
Hovering around it, but that's actually kind of stopping your blade from entering the opponent.
From entering effectively.
Yes. But the bigger problem I have is when, you know, barbarians have huge axes. Because they wouldn't.
But big axes are cool.
Yeah, but they're actually unwieldy and not good to hit. Because we historically have, you know, examples of axes that are not that huge. They just, you know, they have a flat head, and because axe is actually more of a precision weapon than anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're looking to hit the specific point with it. And but I don't think this is the time for me to give a historical lecture.
Yeah, if maybe...
If you wanted to give a historical lecture about swords, we can do that in a later podcast. Just message me.
Mm-hmm. Maybe when we get to the Vikings, then we can analyze their weaponry.
Yeah, that's going to be super easy. I'm just going to see, oh, everybody's holding super oversized weapons. No, this is stupid. Carry on.
this is stupid. Episode ends.
Basically. And also, twin axes is a thing that we actually never use. You know, when they have two heads?
Mm-hmm.
It serves no purpose.
Nice.
Because, surprise, surprise, you're not going to be hitting with both ends at the same time. Yeah, I can just go through this set and tell you every stupid weapon they have, but that's going to be a long episode. So I think we did all the commanders now, right?
Yeah. We did go through all the commanders, and next time if we don't do it next week, we'll probably have the whole set spoiled. Yeah. And probably the commander set as well. So we'll have some more commanders to talk about.
That's going to be interesting. Plus, we'll get to talk about the whole set, because there's a couple of really good cards in this set.
Mm-hmm.
And some interesting concepts that I are playing with.
Mm-hmm. Looking forward to talking about them. But yeah, that was pretty much it.
The episode's not going to be super too long, but that's good, because, damn, if we did the whole set, that would be painful.
Mm-hmm.
So, anything else we need to add, or are we finishing?
I'm pretty confident that we're finished.
Yeah. So, this has been episode 118 of the Elder Dragon Roll podcast. This was your host, Igor, and as always with me was my host, Niksha. Say goodbye, Niksha.
Goodbye.
And as always, the Emperor protects.